Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Paul and producer Dave, and today we have episode 4 of season 2 of the Disney Plus series The Mandalorian. This episode is going to be chapter 12, entitled The Siege. And this was another really, really, really good episode. I think we move some of the plot along. We see some familiar old friends that I was very happy to see in Cara Dune and Greef Karga, and I thought another really strong episode.
Oh, I'm going to cut in first, Paul. Sorry. But I'm going to agree with you, B-Toms. I think that this was, I still think last episode is probably still my favorite, but this is getting close to that territory just because we get so much, I guess it is main plot story, but you know, this kind of, it does tie in a little bit to, like, you know, the video games, a little bit of what we've already seen in the movies. So this just building on more of that Star Wars lore we've always been talking about, and incredible to see it all come together.
Yeah, it was funny because last episode we ended on saying, you know, it could start off either being right to the plot or a few side missions. Could probably be a few side missions. Exactly what it was, still really good. So it didn't really advance the plot farther along in the fact of getting Baby Yoda home, but right. It was still really cool. I mean, if we didn't see Cara Dune in this season, we would be upset. Yeah. So we got her this episode. It was awesome. It's great to see her. And it really did kind of tie up some loose ends on just, you know, the world building of this planet alone. So yeah. I thought it was good. I thought it was really enjoyable.
And me and B-Tom's kind of talked a little bit beforehand. We were saying that, like, this episode, it was leading up to be a lot of side plot, like one of those side missions, but it's still the mission itself tied into the story. But yeah, not like direct. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but you know, yeah. you know what I mean.
Moff Gideon, we got more of him.
Yeah, we get Moff Gideon. Like, we get the whole Baby Yoda kind of, not background, but like at least what he's been through a little bit.
Okay, yeah. I retract my statement now. You're right. This did have a decent amount to do with the plot.
Whenever Mando is interacting with these quote-unquote remnants of the old Empire, I feel like that is going to be considered actual plot, because that's kind of how we get closer to Moff Gideon. Mm. And we did get to see Moff Gideon in the flesh this episode, which was big, and we get kind of the backstory also on why the Empire is so fixated on getting Baby Yoda, which I also thought was cool. Yep. Some of their experiments that are going on, but those are the instant takes we have. Are we ready to get into it?
Always.
Let's do it. So we have our cold opening. It's Baby Yoda and Mando on the Razor Crest, and they're trying to do some repairs. And this was a really, really funny scene where Baby Yoda, I guess, had just crawled into this small little crawl space where Mando obviously wouldn't be able to fit. And we have Mando, like, yelling instructions to him. He's like, put the red wire where the blue one was, and put the blue one where the red one was, but don't hold them close together. And obviously Baby Yoda is just like cooing all over the place and puts the wires together and gets like electrocuted.
We knew that was coming. We knew that electrocution was coming, without a doubt.
He's just such a little troublemaker, but it was a very funny scene, and they both take a break. Mando's just like, well, it was worth a try. Yeah,
that was awesome, honestly, just because Baby Yoda, you know, for as many times as he saved Mando, he's still a baby, but he's pretty smart. I mean,
he recognized red and he recognized blue.
Yeah. But
I guess the instinct that Mando told him, like, just don't touch him. He was like, okay, I'm going to do that, obviously. Yeah,
it was one step away. And he was upset, but at the end, he also did go, are you okay? That was the first thing he said.
Yeah.
I was like, ah, what a good babysitter.
Paternal instincts, Mando. He's a great dad.
Yeah. But
they take a break from fixing the crust, and they're both drinking a little broth or something like that. And Mando kind of lifts his helmet
up. I freaked out.
And I saw Baby Yoda, like, trying to peek under the helmet, trying to get a view of it.
I freaked out, man. That was the first time we caught a little glimpse of the face right there.
I was like, is that his chin? Is that his chin?
Yeah, I wanted to see a little more, but we got a little bit.
But we have Mando look at Baby Yoda, and he says, I think we need to visit some old friends for repairs. How would you like to go back to Navarro? And that was pretty much our quote-unquote home planet from season one. Mm-hmm. And I was ready for a return, because that means we're going to see some more Cara Dune and Greef Karga, who were two characters that I really liked from season one.
Yeah, I can't agree more with you on that. Cara Dune and Greef, especially with what Greef had been through and everything, him kind of being a little evil, but like we knew that he was a good guy deep down. He just was kind of forced in the position that he was when we first saw him. So it was good seeing him again. Definitely.
And we'll get to that. So we get a smash cut to, it's actually the old Mandalorian covert's hideout. And we know this because of the Mandalore sigil that's above it. And it looks very familiar. It's where the old armor, it was her workshop, if you guys recall. But it has since been taken over by a group of Aqualish, kind of like robbers or just general bandits. But they're using this old armory as a hideout for their, you know, whatever they're doing. And currently these Aqualish, who coincidentally is the species from A New Hope that points out Luke Skywalker and is just like, my friend doesn't like you. Bro. I don't like you either.
I was just about to say that. I was like, this is the dude whose friend gets his arm, his friend gets his arm chopped off, right? If I remember that pig nose.
Yeah, the Aqualish. But anyway, these aliens are kind of like arguing over their own loot, and there's this lava meerkat, which is just like this ferret looking thing, and they're seemingly about to chop its head off and like cook and eat this thing. And we know where this is going. Cara Dune arrives and just works these guys in hand-to-hand combat. One of them yells, oh no, it's the Marshal. So she has a new title, and it was a pretty cool scene. Cara Dune is a badass, as we know.
The moves has not faded from Cara Dune. She's still definitely kicking ass. As we know, as B-Tom said, she's the Marshal show. She's been looking over the town for a while, so she's staying. She's fresh as ever.
Yeah, she's been hitting the gym, too.
Looking big.
Yeah. She's a badass, too. I mean, she was diving onto old bodies, doing a somersault, and then using them as a human shield.
She's taking the legs, Paul. You see that? She was taking some legs.
Nice double leg.
I feel like the fight choreography has taken a step up, and it was already good last season, but the fight choreography has always been on point in this show.
Agreed.
I wonder if it's her. I wonder if she's like, dude, let me do this and then this, because she's so dope.
She knows all the moves. Yep. I mean, she's a professional wrestler, so she has all the moves.
So as we get done with that battle sequence, we have Cara Dune is just left with this lava meerkat, and the lava meerkat's like begging for food. She gives him a little crumb and says, that's all I have, but I got to go. I have to return all these items to their proper owners. You know, they've just gotten robbed. And then we get the da-da, and it's the opening sequence. So next scene that we have is the Razor Crest coming down onto Nevarro for a landing, and it's beaten to shit. Like, this poor ship has just been absolutely in shambles for the past two episodes.
Oh, it is. I'm surprised he even made it to Nevarro at that rate.
Yeah, that was decent landing compared to last time, too. But even when he does get the landing, the actual ramp doesn't even get down all the way. It just gets stuck halfway.
Panels flimsy on
the panel in the window or whatever was just flapping away. It was so funny.
Like ropes and stuff. Mon Calamari just slapped a band-aid on it and said, good luck, boss. But anyway, he gets it landed outside of this Nevarro city that we're familiar with, and we have these two friendly faces with giant grins on. Cara Dune and Greef Karga are very happy to see the Razor Crest again. You know, the last time we saw them, we left on very good terms, and they're very happy to see what is now considered an old friend of theirs. Mando immediately gets out of the ship and says, you know, how much are my credits worth around here? And Greef says, your credits are no good, you know, immediately tells two of his best men to fix up the Razor Crest and picks up Baby Yoda and starts cuddling him like, thank God you're still safe. Everyone loves Baby Yoda.
Yeah, Mando was questionable with him with picking up Baby Yoda at first, but, you know, he knows Greef. He's just he's turned over a new leaf, you know.
Yeah, he says to his boys, he's like, all right, fix this up like it's like brand new, like absolutely brand new.
Put him in the works, baby. But they're more hyped to see Baby Yoda than they are Mando himself.
And one of the mechanics seems to take a special interest in the Mandalorian and the child, a Mimbanese mechanic. And we will get back to that later.
He's kind of looking at him as they walk off.
Yeah, kind of gives him a lingering look, if you will. But anyway, Mando doesn't notice. So the four of them, Mando, Baby Yoda, Greef Karga, and Cara Cynthia Dune, walk away from the ship and start walking through the town. And this town looks very different than the last time we were here in this Nevarro city. The markets are bustling with traders and there's a bunch of people. And, you know, it just looks like a much more pleasant environment than the last time we were here. Mando notices it and says, looks like you two have been busy. To which Greef responds, I've been sunk in clerical work myself. You can thank Marshal Dune here for cleaning up the town.
Yeah, it seems like Greef is like the acting governing body, where and Cara Dune's the muscle, like the police force, you know, where she's out there cleaning the streets.
Yeah, which is a complete reverse of what he's actually used to do. He was a guild worker and would take in like one criminals, and now he's doing clerical work.
Yeah, for an actual town.
Well, me and Dave had a conversation about this before we got on the mic. We find out later that his title, he is the current magistrate of Navarro. And in season one, when they had the gunfight with Moff Gideon, and Moff Gideon, you know, revealed that he knew who the three of them were, addressed Greef Karga as disgraced ex-magistrate Greef Karga. Full circle, bringing this around, is I think that Greef Karga was originally like kind of a respected kind of politician sort of person, a magistrate. And then when the Empire took over at Navarro, he was probably forced into this kind of black market-y bounty hunters guild life just to make a living. And he was pretty good at that. But now that they're trying to clean up the planet, he is able to kind of reassume that role of a respected magistrate. So I think it's cool.
Well-deserved.
I think he was always kind of that good guy at heart and was forced into the black market stuff of the Bounty Hunters Guild. So it's nice to see him like this.
Yeah, he's just always has a higher title. He's got what he does, apparently.
He's always got money in the bank.
So Kara makes a comment like, whoa, the crest isn't looking so hot. And Mando kind of tells them that he got into a run-in with the New Republic and that, you know, they shot at his ship and that's why the Razor Crest is the way that it is. And Greef makes a passing comment saying that they should leave the Outer Rim territories alone. If the old Empire wasn't able to settle these Outer Rim territories, then what makes the New Republic think that they can? And that's kind of just a world-building thing. The Outer Rim territories are exactly what they sound like, planets that are on the outside of the galaxy, so it's kind of less populated. Think like Wild Wild West. They're just less policed because they're farther away from the center of the galaxy where things are like popping off.
Makes sense.
Moving on, though, we have Kara and Greef walking Mando and Baby Yoda into the old cantina, or should I say the former cantina, which is now a school. And we see this scene where a protocol droid is just teaching a classroom full of kids. And this is something that was a far cry from the Navarro of old, and it just is a testament to how up and coming this planet is. And it was a cool sight to see, honestly.
Yeah, and this was the part of the episode where we go, okay, Mando's gonna go off and shooting guns, so we gotta drop the baby off somewhere and, you know, give him a babysitter for the episode.
Always comes about 10 minutes in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
And the gets him next to him too. Was such a dick. He wouldn't share his macaroons with Baby Yoda.
And yeah, Baby Yoda was really asking. He was really making the sad faces. You know, he really wanted one, but
he had a whole sleeve of them. He wouldn't give them.
Yeah, messed up. He's just. Yeah. Like, it reminded me of the Napoleon Dynamite. Oh my gosh, Napoleon Dynamite tots scene. Like, yo, Napoleon, give me some of your tots.
Yeah,
blue macaroons in space, so a little bit different.
A little bit different, but he ended up stealing them using the Force, and kid looks back, and Baby Yoda was chewing on it and gave him the hell are you gonna do about it?
Look, yeah.
You know?
So a happy ending there. We get two little nuggets of information from the protocol droid who is still lecturing in the background. She's kind of just talking about the general geography of the galaxy, and she says that there are several. Or the galaxy is made up of several regions. They are the Outer Rim, the Mid Rim, the Expansion Region, the Inner Rim, the Colonies, the Core, and the Deep Core. And that just kind of lays out the galaxy, the framework of it. It's kind of split up into rims going from outside to the inside. And moving forward, she also says that the capital of the Old Republic was within the core on a planet called Coruscant, which we are familiar with from the movies, but the new capital of the New Republic is on a planet called Chandrilla, which is also within the core region. So just a little nugget of information. I don't think we're familiar with the planet of Chandrilla, but I'm sure we will if it is the home seat of the New Republic.
And it was just to, you know, go along with what you were saying earlier. It's the Outer Rim, you know, we're this far out. Nobody can, it's hard for the Empire to take over this planet. It's so far away.
Yeah, definitely. It makes sense that the home seat of the Galactic Council or the New Republic Senate would take place in that core region close to the more densely populated places. So they leave Baby Yoda in this classroom. Mando is hesitant at first to leave him, saying, wherever the kid goes, I go. But Kara and Grief kind of say, he'll be safe here. Trust us. Look around you. Like, we cleaned up Navarro. Look at what a good job we did. Let's go talk business.
Also, he's left Baby Yoda in the hands of plenty of people.
Yeah, just last
episode. It's not always.
Ago, he was left in the hands of two frog humans. So he's been left in worse care.
Yeah, for sure.
So Kara and Grief lead Mando into this different building, and we see another familiar face. We have that bastard Mithril from Chapter 1, Mando's first ever mission, I guess, if you will, from the first Chapter 1.
Never thought I would ever see this little guy again. And he was the actual first one to say Dank Ferrick in the first episode.
Oh, was he? He started the whole thing?
Yeah, yeah, and we'll definitely get some of those in this one later on. But yeah, this guy turned his life around. He got caught again, and Grief Karga gave him an ultimatum. He said, hey, you can either work for me and work off your 350 years, or, you know, I'll kill you.
Or you can stay, or you can stay behind Carbonite, which sounds like it has some physical negative effects as well. Because he's like, I'm still like blind in my left eye from staying in there. So
I'm actually pretty sure. Like, I interpreted it as the Mithril had, because Grief says that the Mithril has been keeping his books since he was a polywog. So it was my impression that. What am I trying to say here? Yeah, Grief says that the Mithril was running his books since he was a polywog, and then he disappeared one day after some creative accounting. And I'm pretty sure that is when the hit was put out for Mando to go get him and retrieve him. So I think he's always been under Grief's care.
He stole a bunch of money.
Instead of killing him, to just sentence him to 350 years of servitude.
Gotcha.
That makes way more sense. Yeah.
Yeah, right?
That's awesome.
But we hear the Mithril refer to him as Magistrate Karga. He says, Magistrate Karga was kind enough to let me work off this debt with him, all 350 years of it. So that was a cool little thing. Mithril is now part of this squad, if unreluctantly. But then Cara Dune gets us talking brass tacks. She says, let's get down to business. Mando says, hey, whoa, wait a second. I'm just here for the repairs of the ship. Grief comes in and says, yeah, buddy, but that'll take a few days. You got plenty of free time to just mess around with us and go on a mission. And we know where this is heading. Cara Dune brings out a map of Navarro, and she says, look at this map. Pretty much everything on this map is green, which means it's safe. It's been clear. We're good here. But then it kind of focuses in on this one small red area, and Grief and Cara Dune kind of brief Mando on this old Imperial base, which has been there since the Imperial expansion. So for many, many years, all through the war. And Cara says that it has a skeleton crew, but it has not been completely abandoned for whatever reason. They can't really figure it out. And she says, this is where the troops came from the last time we took on Moff Gideon at the end of season one.
And it's holding a lot of weaponry that, you know, both sides would be eager to get their hands on.
Yeah, especially the black market. And Mando kind of says something like, what? So you want me to go in and just wipe out all the forces, like, so that you can go in and make all the money off of those weaponry? And Grief just says, dude, I just want the Imperials off my planet. And I have a good quote. He says, if we could take out that one last base, Navarro would be completely safe, and we could be a trade anchor for the entire sector. And that just goes along with it. He's kind of this new politician sort of guy, and he's always thinking in the background, like, he's trying to make Navarro like a respectable planet, so maybe they could, you know, be with the New Republic and be an upstanding planet to maybe grow this population. And it was really cool to see him thinking like that.
Cara Dune has a line where she says, yeah, and this will make the planet completely safe again, finally. And at that point, Mando was like, all right, like, that's his soft spot. That's when he's like, all right, fine, I'll do it, because it'll benefit all these people. He's such a softy.
Mando, such a good guy. We love our Mando. But he answers with, okay, well, what are we looking at? And then we get a smash cut to them traveling in a silver land speeder through the lava flats. And our squad is going to be Mando, Grief, Cara Dune, and this Mithril guy, who is kind of just their driver right now.
Yeah, it's his speeder too.
Yeah, his Silverland speeder. Good call.
And the Grief's just kind of giving him the lowdown. He's saying the whole place is powered by a reactor. So we'll just get in, overload it, and get out.
Get the hell out of there. Yeah, it's supposed to be in and out real quick. 5-minute mission.
It's always easy. It always sounds easy on paper.
What was that? Yeah, Rick and Morty. 2-minute adventure. In and out. In and out. Good.
Yeah.
And obviously, hilarity always ensues. And the Mithril's like comic relief this episode. I don't know if it worked for you guys. I was feeling the Mithril. He's always busting someone's balls. But he's like, hey, how far out can I drop you? You know, right at the front door is a little close for a civilian. And Grief is just like, dude, you're taking us to the front door, or you can just walk home by yourself. And he's like, okay, well, not really giving me much of a choice. He also offers him an extra 100 years off of his 350-year sentence. So the Mithril's like, okay, I got you. Front door it is. They get to the front door and the controls have been melted. They're not really working. So the Mithril tries to say, hey, I'm out of here, guys. And, you know, it's been a back and forth.
I'll pick you up in an hour.
Yeah. Grief says, no, you're not getting it, buddy. Like, another 30 years off your sentence. Come on, help us out. Meanwhile, Mando takes matters into his own hands. Jetpacks up to this platform. We see a stormtrooper fall off the platform, and then the elevator rig gets opened, and they all elevator up. And Mando has taken out like 7 stormtroopers. He's such a badass.
It is not as barren as they were claiming it to be. He makes the comment. He's like, well, you were saying this is like there were skeletons here. There's like a whole army here. Like, what's going on? And she's like, I have no idea. I was like, that's what I was told. Mm-hmm.
So Grief gets them back focused. He says that the reactor should be in the heat shaft and that if they drain the cooling lines, the whole base will go up in a matter of minutes. Seems simple enough. As they're kind of progressing through the base, right now they're in the shuttle bay, I guess you would call it. The Mithril notices a mint Trexler Marauder, which is just this really heavily armed transport vehicle. And he notes that they could get a fortune for it on the black market. Mando chirps in. He says, hey, man, this is all getting vaporized. Like, this is the point of the mission. We're trying to destroy it all. Mm-hmm. So they continue through the Imperial base. And we get a cut to an Imperial command center. And it's a security officer sees one of the video feeds goes down, and he's trying to get in contact with the shuttle bay. You know, hey guys, I'm not seeing your feed. Can you check in? And just then we get Cara Dune come in and choke this officer out. He never had a chance. Yep. Mando starts switching off all of the camera feeds while Grief Karga grabs a code cylinder from off of the officer, noting that it could come in handy later.
Which it does.
Anything to note?
No, nothing to note. I was just saying it. You know, it was important a little bit. I thought it was going to be like have a bigger point in the episode, but it literally just opened one door. But
what, the code cylinder?
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree.
We saw it, and me and Emily were joking. We didn't know what it was first. We were like, all right, like, it's got to be a key, right? But like, it looks like a vape. Like, yeah. Is Car going to try to vape right now?
They're jeweling. Yeah.
Yeah. Jewels made it.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they pass by a couple of troopers and they come across a door, which they tell the Mithril to slice with the code cylinder. So literally they get this cylinder and then use it on the next door. That's it. They could have just totally not done the code cylinder. Now that pisses me off.
Whatever. Well, it does come into play later again.
It was probably quicker. Yeah. I mean, when they were at the front door, you know, they were hounding him because it was taking a while. And he's like, look, this is only for plumbing. Like, this isn't meant to like actually bust into a door. So it's probably just save some time if you just grab the key.
Yeah. So they slice through the door with the code cylinder, and this is the door to the reactor. And the Mithril is the one that is tasked with climbing out onto the ledge and like pressing the buttons to drain the coolant. He complains, saying, oh, I'm afraid of heights and heat. Oh, there's no guardrail here. It is a very precarious perch.
And what's so funny too is like they just now are making that no guardrail comment when back in, you know, not the 90s or early 2000s when these movies were coming out, like this would have saved so many stormtrooper lives if they had just put fucking guardrails up all along these fucking why are they placed in these weird areas, you know? Just like
that's 100% they got that joke out of the Family Guy Star Wars episode.
100%. Yep.
Probably. When they were on the Death Star. They were on the Death Star, and it's the two little guys right there after the beam goes off to destroy Alderaan. And they're like, so I'm talking to them. And all I say is, hey, forget the healthcare. All I want is one rail. Yep. One rail right here. But I guess they don't want him leaning all day. Yeah. I guess
they don't want us leaning all day.
That's but so no, funny. Paul, I knew it was. It sounded familiar too when he said it, so I knew you were going to come in with the Family Guy reference because they do make that comment there.
100%.
Anyway, the Mithril is successful and says, "Hey, yo, I got it. The coolants are off. This place is about to blow." So Squad flees from the reactor room, and as they're escaping, they pass, you know, they see a bunch of stormtroopers are like running to action, and one of them is on the walkie and is calling for reinforcements. So as they're progressing through this Imperial base still, they stumble into a room where there are two Imperial scientists, and you can tell they're scientists based on kind of what they're wearing, and they're whispering back and forth. The one says, you know, purge the drives, make sure you purge all the drives, and then kind of our squad with Mando, Greef, Kara, and the Mithril roll up, and the one says, you know, destroy it all, just destroy it. So he starts like blasting this kind of main drive, and there's an ensuing gunfight wherein both of the scientists are easily overwhelmed. And so the squad is kind of like examining these misformed looking creatures in tanks, and this is a meaty little bit of the episode where we get a lot of information thrown at us. So
Cara take us through nice and slow.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to. So Cara Dune and Greef Karga realize that the Imperial facility is not just like a forward operating base like they thought, but it's actually kind of an experimental laboratory. And she decides that they need to hack into the system in order to figure out what's going on, because she just has a feeling that there's something bigger at play here. Because, you know, a normal operating facility wouldn't just have these weird looking creatures and tanks. She was getting a weird vibe from it.
Real quick, I did want to say that I'm glad they talked about it in this episode, because like when I also saw the creatures in the cases, I was like, okay, this is, yeah, exactly what you said. This is more than just a military operations base. Like, what is actually going on here? Mm-hmm. But they do quickly give us an answer, and they pack a lot of information in this response of what is actually going on here.
Yeah, so they tell the Mithril to try and open up the transmissions that the two scientists were trying to, you know, purge as they walked in. And I have the entire quote here. It is a transmission from Dr. Pershing, who was actually someone we met in, I believe it was chapter 3 in season 1. He was just kind of the doctor that was working for the client on Baby Yoda. Yeah.
He was in episode 1 too. And he made it a point in episode 1 when they were telling Mando what to do. He said, go there, retrieve it. And the client was making a point to say, hey, this is a high class target. If you can't bring it in, it's okay to terminate them. And yeah. Dr. Pershing, who was there, was like, no, it's absolutely not okay. It's not what we agreed on. You have to bring them in alive. And now we kind of get an answer to that.
Yeah. So I got the full quote here from the transmission, and this is Dr. Pershing talking. So he says, I replicated the results of the subsequent trials, which also resulted in catastrophic failure. There were more promising effects for an entire fortnight, but then sadly, the body rejected the blood. I highly doubt we'll find a donor with a higher M count, though. I recommend that we suspend all experimentation. I fear that the volunteer will meet the same regrettable fate if we proceed with the transfusion. Unfortunately, we have exhausted our initial supply of blood. The child is small, and I was only able to harvest a small amount without killing him. If these experiments are to continue as requested, we would again require access to the donor. I will not disappoint you again, Moff Gideon.
And
so that's a lot.
Yeah. And I guess the first thing I guess we can talk about in that quote is the M count, or the MIDI count, is what it's actually called. The MIDI count, I guess, is they're microscopic organisms that live within, I guess, Jedi, you know, like early
Midichlorians, baby. Yeah. Let's go. For everybody saying Phantom Menace, oh, it's not good. It didn't add anything to the plot. They talk about midichlorians and then they never bring it up again. Well, guess what?
Here it is.
Yeah. They never thought it would come back in the best show ever.
But they're microscopic organisms that essentially connect you with the force, or like the nature around you, right?
And everybody has midichlorians. Yeah, they're just kind of like an essence of nature. They're neither good nor bad, but this M count thing is everybody has an M count. Just normal beings have a very low M count, but everybody has them. beings with a higher M count, that's how you become a quote unquote force sensitive being, is because you have a high concentration of these midichlorians in,
right,
in your body.
Not a Jedi. I was saying Jedi, not Jedi, just force sensitive. That's what I was force trying to find.
Right. Yes. So, and what I can unpack from this quote is that the Empire is experimenting with blood transfusions from, you know, force sensitive beings with a high midichlorian count, and trying to inject, you know, normal beings with this, with what I assume is the intent to artificially create force sensitive beings. And they're using Baby Yoda as this mystical Yoda creature who obviously is very force sensitive as their blood donor to try and do this. It's fucked up is what it is.
Oh, absolutely fucked up. And we already, as Star Wars fans, we already know one artificial force-sensitive being, and that was not Sidious.
Snoke.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no. Supreme Leader Snoke.
Snoke was one of these beings that was, yeah, exactly. He was created from these blood transfusions.
Yeah, the term is strand cast, and that word has actually already been introduced in season one, when Mando is meeting with Queel and they're kind of talking about the child and speculating on what he could be. Mando suggests, hey, I think the kid might be a strand cast. And Queel responds, I don't think he was engineered. I would know. I worked in the gene farm. So these strand cast things are kind of known about, like people know that they exist. And what they are is just bioengineered organisms. So anything that has been artificially created life is considered kind of a strand cast. And it seems like what the Empire is trying to do is artificially create force sensitive beings.
And you said this happens before the whole story of Rey, correct?
This would be now, yes.
The
time that we're in right now is pre the most recent three.
So we could assume that the new Empire, you know, they get their hands on Baby Yoda and they eventually do create Snook, who is supposed to be, he was created as like a son to Sidious, but he was actually there to train Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
His purpose was to die to Kylo Ren, essentially. Like, he never saw that as his mission. That's what Sidious, based off what I read, that's what Sidious wanted, is he wanted to use him to train Kylo.
Snoke was just a proxy leader
exactly.
for Darth Sidious the entire time. Darth Sidious was always pulling the strings in the background, so he was just a proxy leader that Darth Sidious used for his own gain. Yes, and one of those things was probably to train Kylo Ren to a certain extent.
And fun fact, we do know that before... We did get introduced to the M counts in the movies, and we do know that Luke Skywalker actually has the highest M count. He has the highest M count of any Jedi up until that point in time. He had over 20,000, I think, which was far surpassed Yoda, too.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had the highest force potential out of any Jedi ever.
Two cool things is, one, I kind of make sense why Yoda's race has been hidden away. I mean, they're these force-sensitive, extremely force-sensitive race. So if they were out and about and they had all this valuable, basically, genes within them, basically, the Empire would do exactly what they were doing to Baby Yoda. They would just try to experiment on them and basically use them as a farm instead of actual living beings. So that's kind of explains why we never see anything about this race and why they're always in hiding, which I kind of like. And the second thing I got away from that is they were sticking needles in Baby Yoda. They were causing so much pain.
Yeah.
Mando already got his revenge a little bit for those needles, but he's definitely not happy hearing that. The more intricacies of the experiments.
So we good on that transmission quote?
Yeah, I think we covered everything that we needed to. Mm-hmm. Like we said, that was very important for not only this Mandalorian, but the series as a whole of Star Wars.
Yeah, now we have a motive behind why the Empire is trying to get their hands on Baby Yoda. I think we all had a vague understanding that the Empire knew that race was special, but we didn't really key in on their specific motive and what they were trying to do with the child. And now we have it. So that was, you know, very informative, at least for us, the audience.
More layers to this baby.
More layers, dude. We're pulling them back. Someone talking onions. So, but Mando immediately says, no way, this must be an old recording because I killed Moff Gideon. And the Mithril's like, but it's only 4 days old. And we knew Moff Gideon was alive the entire time, but this is the first time that Mando is realizing Moff Gideon survived the crash and he's still alive. So that's kind of like mind blowing to him.
I had to take a step back because I was like, did he not remember that he was alive? But then I remembered, it was like, I guess, yeah, like he crashes the plane, assumes he's dead, but no one but Moff Gideon knows that he gets out.
And he realizes kind of internally, he says, wait a second, if Moff Gideon is alive, then, you know, Baby Yoda is still in danger. Mm-hmm. Just as he comes to that realization, a bunch of stormtroopers close in on their position.
Over there.
Yeah, freaking stormtroopers. So our squad easily eliminates the stormtroopers in a gunfight, and Mando, once the dust settles, he says, I gotta get back to the kid. Kara says, take your jetpack, you'll be faster that way, like, just go, we'll meet you back in town. So the two different groups, Mando is on his own, and then we have Grief Karga, Kara, and the Mithril as their own separate group. And the two groups are just blasting their way out of the base. Mando makes his way back to the reactor room, which is, I guess we can call it like a volcano. I don't know. It's in the center of a lava pit, so it has an open top. So he just jetpacks from out of the reactor room and, you know, he's out. Then we focus on Kara, Grief, and the Mithril. So the squad progresses through this Imperial base and they make their way back to that original shuttle bay that we were on earlier. At which time they were confronted with a platoon of troopers. They get into another gunfight, and Kara makes a move for the Trexler Marauder that we saw earlier, that just heavily armed transport vehicle. She says, all right, baby girl, let's see what you can do. Mm. And then
She whips out the moves.
So Kara gets Grief and the Mithril into the transport, and after she tries to go out one exit, they seal that exit. She makes right for the edge of the shuttle bay, drives this thing clean off the side, lands cleanly on the Mithril's land feeder.
Of course.
Just drive away. I thought this was actually a really awesome scene. Again, this was the scene for me where the CGI just looked spectacular, with them like catapulting off of the side of this shuttle bay, and then the scout troopers on their speeder bikes in pursuit, like going down the side of this canyon. I just think it looked spectacular.
I hyped it up. I guess it's just all kinds of space travel that I like, space chases that I really enjoy, because I think it was two episodes ago when Mando's, yeah, you know, using his Razor Crest and dodging out of the air against the two Rebel fighters. I just love all these chase scenes. They're really well done. And I thought it was really funny too, when the speeders hop off the mountain and two of them just crash immediately. Cause it's what do you guys expect? Like, you're going down a rocky ass mountain. That's just no desert. You know, it's
classic,
not flat.
Stormtrooper shit. Just being absolute fodder. Yeah. Dying
I love how they have the speed biker stormtroopers just had different armor, like helmets in general. I think that's pretty sweet. And this whole scene just reminded me of the speeder bike chase on Endor from the original trilogy, with like Luke and Leia on their speeders. I don't know. It just felt nostalgic for some reason.
For sure. I kind of like the scout trooper masks. I feel like those are cooler than the just standard issue trooper masks.
Mm.
I don't know. That's just me. And no, their speeder bikes are dope. The Empire has the coolest looking shit. I will give them that.
To add on to that, this cruiser that they just took, is this the Empire's? Because it's pretty decked out.
Yeah, dude. The Trexler Marauder.
Yeah. Grief hops in the gunner seat, immediately, and everything's futuristic looking.
Yeah.
But this is pretty clean, man. It's hard to look futuristic in this series, but I mean, it looks pretty advanced for this day and age.
Yeah, man. And that's why it was so important for them to blow everything up, because if the black market were able to get their hands on all these weapons, they could sell it for a fortune, this, that, and the other thing. So, like, there is some dope stuff. Like, at the time that the Empire fell, they still had access to, like, the best resources. That's why the Rebellion, like, people thought it never stood a chance, is because the Empire just had unlimited resources. They had the dopest machines and vehicles and stuff. So, and it was kind of awesome to just see them in this abandoned hangar. But like we said, some of these scout troopers died as they were trying to make their way down the side of the canyon, but three of them managed to survive and get to the canyon, and they are in hot pursuit of our squad in this Trexler Marauder. Like you said, Paul, Grief immediately goes to the laser gun. He's able to take out one of the speeders. Cara Dune takes out the second speeder by just kind of ramming him into the side of the canyon. But the third scout trooper on the speeder manages to climb up on top of the Marauder. And Homeboy takes like 45 seconds to wind up this grenade and throw it down. And then when, instead of throwing it down, he just turns around and looks at a laser turret as it just blasts him into smithereens. So that was kind of dumb, but it looked cool. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah. And Grief was definitely smirking and smiling and was very happy to kill that man. And then Kara says his whole line, like, all right, headed home, boss. And they think they're out of the thick of it. Real quickly, it flashes back to the base. The reactor is overloading, lava is spewing up, but we do see a few TIE fighters. They have also a dope. We were talking about the X-Wings going into formation to fly. They were into flight mode. And
I looked into this. So they're called Outland TIE fighters. And I guess Outland is like the specific type of TIE fighter, but literally the only difference is the wings fold in so that they're like, they look cooler for landing. More access to the cockpit too. But they look dope.
Definitely dope as hell.
But like you said, these four TIE fighters manage to escape the base before it explodes, and they're in hot pursuit of their Marauder. So the TIE fighters are exchanging blaster fire with Grief in the turret while they're all the while just slowly closing in. Grief is able to take out one of the TIE fighters, but the debris from it crash landing kind of just like rumbles and destroys the turret. So Grief has to like jump off the turret, and they're left defenseless with three more TIE fighters in pursuit. So the Marauder like emerges from this canyon, and it's just a close but oh so far home stretch until they get back to the safety of the town. And as the TIE fighters are like closing in and closing in, out of nowhere, we just see like laser blast take one of them out, and we see the Razor Crest just like appear, and it looks awesome. I love watching the Razor Crest back at 100%. Taking out TIE fighters, it looks dope.
The heroic music cues into play, and Mando just does his thing in that bad boy. Full power now. The Razor Crest is back at 100%, and so Mando's going to utilize every second of that.
Yeah, and we see Mando in the pilot's chair, and we have Baby Yoda riding shotgun
on
a roller coaster, putting his hands up, just like enjoying the ride.
And he's got the cookies too. He's got the blue sleeve.
He totally has the macaroon. They're like bright blue, neon blue macaroons. Yeah. I loved it.
This is one of the best Baby Yoda episodes we've gotten so far, I think. In my mind, at least. He was just spot on. No genocide here.
You guys have been hating on Baby Yoda since episode 2.
No.
Baby Yoda slander on this podcast.
It was only the genocide episode. Other than that, Baby Yoda's been a ball to work with.
And I was getting nostalgia from this too. I mean, how many times have we seen a TIE fighter right on the tail of another ship, and then last second, right before a TIE fighter's about to take him out, you know, the Millennium Falcon comes over, and Han Solo gives a little yeehaw, and Chewie going.
Very typical Star Wars last minute save.
Yeah, and then it goes into the cockpit. It shows Mando, and then it shows Mando's, you know, co-pilot, little Baby Yoda. It was basically, you know, A New Hope all over again.
So we know where this is going. Mando pursues the third TIE fighter into the upper atmosphere, like above the clouds, like takes it out, cuts the engine, like does a 180, and then takes on the fourth TIE fighter, like head on. And he does this spiraling maneuver. It looks so cool how they shot it, but takes out the fourth TIE fighter, no problem. Like the rest of the squad is cheering him on from below, and Mando looks at Baby Yoda, says, "Not too bad, huh, kid?" And Baby Yoda just like vomits on himself.
Yeah, too much.
Mando's got to clean it up, of course. He's piloting the ship, reaching one arm back to wipe him up a little bit, being the father that he is.
That's our dad.
Yep.
So Mando goes Grief actually gets a hold of him on the Transcom and says, Mando, how much do I owe you for saving us? And Mando says, hey, we'll call it even with the repairs. And then Grief says, well, at least let me buy you a drink. And Mando declines, saying that he's got, you know, bigger fish to fry. He's got more important business that he needs to take care of now. And also him and Baby Yoda have to leave Navarro before Moff Gideon catches wise to them ever being there. He's on the run, so he can't stay in one place for too long, especially not Navarro, where the Empire clearly still has a presence, and I'm sure Moff Gideon will be hearing about one of his bases being destroyed.
Grief is totally understandable too with it. He kind of just like is like, yeah, go on, do your thing. But they definitely, Moff Gideon is definitely due for an arrival on Navarro again fairly soon. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So we kind of have a little bit of a flash forward on Navarro. We're back in our town, and it's a New Republic starfighter pilot, and his name is Captain Carson Teva. And he's just kind of following up on the destruction of this Imperial base. He's kind of just like filing a police report.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just following up. And Grief is just playing completely dumb. He's saying, oh, yeah, you know, I really don't remember anything happening out of the ordinary. Captain Teva is just like, well, what do you remember after the Razor Crest flew overhead? And he said, whoa, 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 I don't remember saying anything about seeing no Razor Crest. So he's just, you know,
being a good friend to
Mando. He says, you know, nothing I can think of, officer, but if I do, I'll be sure to send you a gram. That is, if you're ever out this far again. Great scene. I like Grief Karga a lot. He's a good character, especially now that he's not like a bastard after Mando. I think he's a very good ally for Mando.
I agree. Grief Karga, especially after seeing this episode, he crawls into one of my favorite characters of the series so far.
Great, yeah, I like Grief for him. So moving on, we then have Captain Teva walks out of the building from his conversation with Grief, and he runs into Cara Dune, and they just kind of start chatting each other up. You know, Carson Teva praises Cara Dune's job cleaning up the city and notes her great record as a former Republic soldier. And he kind of suggests, hey, you know, the Republic could use a good soldier like yourself. And Cara Dune is kind of just like dismissive of the entire conversation. But then Teva goes on to say, you know, there's something going on out here. They don't believe it in the core worlds, but it's true. These aren't isolated incidents. They need to be stopped before it's too late. But we can't do it without local support. Says here, you're from Alderaan. I served during Alderaan. Did you lose anyone? To which Cara Dune responds, I lost literally everyone, boss. My planet blew up.
Yeah. Really.
And that's a conversation ender. He's just like, I'm sorry for your loss, and starts walking away. But not before he slams down a badge bearing the insignia of the New Republic.
I was just going to say, it definitely seemed like she was thinking about it. She was thinking, damn, maybe I should go out there because I don't want what happened to my home planet to happen to any other home planet.
Yeah.
So she might, you know, she might sign up. Who knows?
That was going to be my exact comment. She's definitely joining. I mean, she would just do with the New Republic what she did with this one planet, but just on multiple planets. She would be the cleanup crew, be able to flip all these towns into, you know, actual societies that can live in peace and all this. So I think that is really appealing to her, and there's no way she turns that down.
Since we met her in season one, she has kind of been operating under this retired soldier mantra, but I think it's all a front. I think she is too valuable of a soldier, and
just she knows it.
What we know about the character, she is too morally upstanding to just be content with being a small time like police officer in this small little village on Navarro. I think she knows that she is
She's very capable. She knows that. And that's,
very capable. Thank you.
And she can prove herself in a lot more ways than, you know, just kicking some ass. And she would
100%
be a huge asset for the New Empire.
I think she's going to want to. Yeah. So I think while she was dismissive of this specific conversation with the New Republic, I think eventually she will mix her eggs into that basket. And that's exciting. I would like to see Cara Dune as like a legit New Republic officer.
The next scene we got was a cutaway to space, and we get the classic overhead cruiser going by. And Emily, she didn't see it at first. She goes, "What's that?" I go, "That's looks like an Imperial cruiser, and that doesn't look too good." And of course, we go inside, and they're on the bridge. They get a hologram from the mechanic. Grief Karga's mechanic.
Scumbag, dude. A Mimbanese worker, Grief's mechanic.
Oh, stupid Mimbanese. Mm-hmm. So then this lieutenant, I guess, gets the message, walks to none other than Moff Gideon and says, don't worry, we found the package again and they have a tracker on the ship. God. So
damn. And I just want to point out too, Moff Gideon's outfit, he just, it looks so much like Darth Vader to me. Did you guys not get that vibe?
Yeah, it does. He's got the black cape and everything. I mean, he doesn't have the helmet, obviously, because he can't breathe without it. But yes, very, very Vader-esque.
And for a second, he was like looking at something on the wall. It was obviously like an army of some sort. But at first, I was like, he's looking at a Vader helmet, like, because it was like kind of black. And I was like, I thought he was going to, is he going to don this Vader helmet and just become the new Darth Vader? But honestly, thankfully, it wasn't a Vader helmet. And it was just a room of, like, was it droids or was it people?
Well, they're dark troopers, I think, is what Wikipedia had them as. And the Wikipedia didn't even have much on this specific class. There are dark troopers in Star Wars.
Yeah, we've seen them.
Super troopers, more or less. So think that.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I was getting a little nervous because I didn't know if they were artificially injecting these with the M count. Whatever they
That's
got.
That's what I was thinking too.
You think it could be like an army of force sensitive people? That would be crazy.
But I mean, like you guys were saying, they do look like robotic droids again.
They they were hanging, like they were just like sitting in these like capsules. You know, they weren't like, no human would have been just like sitting upright in a capsule like that. I personally thought they were droids, but who knows?
I think they could be like bioengineered super troopers, honestly,
yeah,
something like that.
That's what I think they
Either
are.
Way, they're definitely no good for Mando. Things spell trouble. They look legit.
And I think that closes the episode essentially, right?
Yeah,
yeah, that's pretty much it.
Moff just walks around looking at his little army he's got going on, and he looks pretty happy.
I would be too. Moff Gideon is setting himself up to be in a very good position compared to the rest of the galaxy. I feel like.
Yeah. So, and now he has a tracker on the Razor Crest. So he's going to know exactly where Mando is. And to an extent, he's going to know exactly where Baby Yoda is. So do we think we're going to get another confrontation between the Razor Crest and Moff Gideon next episode?
This was technically episode 4 of this season. It was chapter 12. This was the halfway point. So I don't know, man. It definitely could be. I mean, it's so hard to say with this series, honestly. I feel like we've been on and off, like right and wrong with our guesses of, oh, next episode is going to be a filler episode, or, you know, next episode is going to be actual content. We've been like off, I think, every time. It's hard to say, but if we get it next episode, phenomenal. If not, it'll definitely be this season.
I'm going bold call. I think next episode or very soon, we're going to get actually the planet, what is it, Corvus?
Yeah, and Corvus.
Ahsoka Tona. I think we're gonna get that, and then hopefully, I know I'm shooting for the stars here, we get, you know, the Mando crew with Ahsoka's help and Bo-Katan versus Moff Gideon and the super troopers.
I mean, Mando's got his army built up. I mean, he's got Cara Dune, he's got Grief, he's got Cobb, you know, like all these names we could list. And I would love to see them fight some super troopers. I feel like that would be an epic battle scene.
Okay, so I will say that next chapter is chapter 13. It's been leaked that the title is called The Jedi. People are speculating that it's going to be a longer than usual episode. And the director and writer is Dave Filoni, who is one of the two showrunners. So,
yeah. Oh my God.
I think we're going to be at Corvus next episode.
No,
I don't
know we would,
because the Razor Crest is in working action. We don't have a frog on board, so we can get to space. Yeah, I think Corvus is our next destination, and I think we're going to get Ahsoka Tano.
Let's go.
This is awesome.
The fact that you mentioned that the Razor Crest is back at full capacity, it's like, okay, we finally have nothing in our way anymore. Like, all the passengers are off. Razor Crest is good to go. Time to fucking start making money moves.
Let's pull trig, yeah.
I'm interested to see what Ahsoka Tano is up to, what she's like. Like, is she more of the Obi-Wan hermit sort of person, just living in exile on this forest planet? Or is she going to be like readily available to help? Like,
Right.
Ahsoka has met the original Yoda, so she's definitely familiar with this species and would, but she's not a quote-unquote Jedi. She abandoned the Jedi Order. So I'm very curious to see how she reacts to being presented with a Force-sensitive child.
Oh my God. You mentioning the episode title for next week is just like, yeah. I'm now in, man. I want this episode. Holy shit.
Okay, so, and as we're wrapping this episode up, though, what did we think? Out of 10, what are we rating this one?
I'll go first. So like I said, last episode was still my favorite. I think I gave it a 9. This one I probably give a 7.5 personally. I think the content of learning about the lab and Baby Yoda's background a little bit, I think that carries this episode a lot for me. There were some like minor things we could have got by without, so that kind of dropped it a little bit for me. But overall, I think it was a phenomenal episode. So I'll give it like a 7.5, close to an 8, probably in that range.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say the exact same thing. I was going to say 7.5 and 8. Exactly what you said. It gave us just a little bit enough of what, you know, the Empire actually wants to be up to, what Moff Gideon's up to. And, you know, it had baby girl Cara Dune throwing some bodies left and right. So it was good. And
B-Town's, yeah, I like the episode too. I would probably give it a probably a 7 or an 8 out of 10. Yeah, we'll go 7.5 out of 10. Anytime that they interact with the remnants of the Empire, I think it's a really cool episode. I like exploring that. And also we get the Empire's motive for wanting Baby Yoda. That's cool. We're another step closer to Corvus and Ahsoka Tano. That's awesome. The Razor Crest was back in commission. I thought it was a good episode. You know, all around that 7.5 up to a full 8.
That's what I kind of did too, is round it up. But yeah. I actually forgot to mention this earlier in the podcast. I can't remember if it was at the beginning when he first gets to a Nevarro or at the end when they just beat or they set off the reactor. Regardless, there's actually a statue in Nevarro of IG-11 in the background. Yeah, like I think it's when they actually are going to the school and dropping off Baby Yoda. They pass by a statue of IG-11 holding up his gun, just like posing.
They commemorated him.
That is so cool.
One time bounty hunter droid became a hero in this town.
Dude, literally, they would not have gotten out of that situation without IG-11. That dude is a liberator and a hero.
That's amazing.
I'm going to make a comparison. It's the Nick Foles statue right outside Lincoln Financial Stadium.
Ooh, well.
Oh my God.
A lot of people are hating on that statue now.
And the episode.
Yeah. So, guys, we're going to be covering The Mandalorian all season long. So we will be grinding out episodes weekly. So follow along for that. Our other four hosts are covering Carnival Row right now in a Binge With Us series, Rooks vs. Vets. That's a lot of fun. And as always, if you like what you heard, give Binge Town TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Binge Town TV. And thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks. 11, baby. Mm.